Les colloques du Collège de France.
The last talk of this morning session before lunch is by René Beckmann. René comes from the Center for Genetic Regulation in Barcelona, and she's going to tell us about large rearrangement. Thank you, René.
Thank you. Can you hear me well? But thanks very much for this invitation. I'm feeling honored to be here and share with you our work. So, which basically also focuses on enhancers, but more from a clinically perspective. And we basically try to understand the early events that lead to lymphoma formation. So instead of introducing enhancers to you, which has been already beautifully introduced this morning, I will just try to explain you the disease model in which we are working, which is lymphoma or B-cell lymphoma, which are tumors of our immune system. So lymphomas arise from hematopoietic stem cells that are blood cells that are present in our bone marrow, and they go through different stages to become either plasma cells that produce our antibodies or memory B-cells that are responsible for our long-term immunity. And the process of lymphomagenesis basically is the formation of lymphomas can arise from different stages in this trajectory. And we basically focus on non-Hodgkin lymphomas that come in many different flavors, either mantle cell lymphoma or here follicular lymphoma, Burkitt lymphoma, or diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Although these are very different at the level of both prognosis as well as disease or underlying, no, as well as the sites in which they occur in our body, they have all something in common, and that is they carry translocations of chromosome 14, in which we have the immunoglobulin locus, which harbors a very strong enhancer. I wouldn't call it a super enhancer because I know that's still a controversial term, but it's a very large enhancer. And this chromosome 14 translocates to different other chromosomes. You see here an example of chromosome 3, 8, 11, and 18, which are the most common translocation partners. And there, this strong enhancer can basically activate other genes, and this is thought to lead to lymphoma formation. So to understand this process further, I just would like you to give you a perspective of what we try to do in the lab, and then I will come to our work on translocations and enhancer sequences. So what we try to understand is probably this translocation formation is a rather random process, not fully random, but rather random. So the question is, why are only these four translocations found in the majority of these patients? Another question is if these immunoglobulin translocations can induce other effects than just activating these genes close to the breakpoint. A third question is focusing on DNA methylation events, which was introduced before. We try to understand the enhancer, the evolution of the enhancer landscape in lymphomas from studying DNA methylation features, which can be used as a readout of past or present enhancer activity. So DNA methylation harbors a memory of enhancer activation at enhancer site. So we try to use this to do that. I will not talk about that today, but this is another feature we do in the lab. And then we also try to understand how DNA methylation regulates gene expression, especially at enhancers, because this is still a debate in the field. So today I will talk about our question if immunoglobulin translocations can induce multiple oncogenic effects. So as you've seen before, the vast majority of these translocations occur at four different loci. And these loci all have something in common, as you can see over here. So we have seen this before. This is just a graphical scheme. Those translocations bring in close proximity this immunoglobulin enhancer, which is a very large enhancer which regulates the B-cell receptor, which is essential for B-cells to recognize their antigen and to produce antibodies. And this translocation brings this enhancer in close proximity in a specific topologically associated domain with an oncogene. And those oncogenes are all transcription factors that either regulate, they are anti-apoptotic, so basically they can prevent apoptosis of the cells, or they induce basically a strong level of proliferation. However, this is probably not only the only effect that is induced by translocation. I've tried to graphically summarize that here. Basically, this is the translocation of chromosome 11 to chromosome 14. Here we have the two breakpoints. And if you make a translocation, you get a very short chromosome here, which is called derivative 11, and here another one, which is called derivative 14. So we can see here that the immunoglobulin locus drives the overexpression of cyclin 1, leading to overproliferation. But we can see multiple effects that actually have not yet been studied, really. So basically, what we can see that the size of the chromosomes change drastically. We can see that this immunoglobulin enhancer is basically displaced from its original position to another chromosome. And we also see that the telomere here at the end of the chromosome is also repositioned. And we try to understand those effects and if they could contribute to tumor formation. So how did we try to resolve this? We first looked at initial observations from patient samples. Then we did in vitro and in silico studies. And then finally, we built a working model. So the initial observations come from gene expression and interchromosomal interaction analysis. Then the in vitro and in silico studies from Hi-C and imaging and 3D genome modeling. And also we induced translocations in vitro in the lab. And then the working model is what I will come at in my last slides. So first look at the initial observations. We basically compared mantle cell lymphoma cells, which are cells that carry translocations, with cells that are mature healthy B cells, as well as chronic lymphocytic leukemia cells, which are also a B cell type of tumor, but they don't carry the translocation. So basically, those cells, those mature B cells and those CLL cells are wild type at the level of their karyotype. So they have two wild type chromosomes 11, one from the father and one from the mother, and two chromosomes 14. While those cells that are mantle cell lymphoma cells, they have a translocation, they have one wild type 11, one wild type 14, and then they have these two translocated pieces. So just to give you some terminology, we basically have splitted our chromosomes in different pieces. So we call chromosome 11 up every part of the chromosome that is above the translocation breakpoint. Then we have another part, chromosome 11 down, that is below the chromosome breakpoint. And the same for chromosome 14. So we also have chromosome 14 up and chromosome 14 down. So the first thing we did was we looked at gene expression. So here we compared mantle cell lymphomas with mature healthy B cells, and we distributed the gene expression changes along the different chromosomes. And then basically what we see that compared to the expected distribution, you see that chromosome 11 down has a higher level of upregulated genes compared than what you would expect. So you see there's an effect on the translocated chromosome that could be induced by this translocation. Then if we look at the interchromosomal interaction profile, we compared mantle cell lymphoma cells with mature B cells and CLL cells. And here I would like to stress that normally Hi-C data, which is used to study chromosomal interactions, is used to look at intrachromosomal interactions. So we talk about promoter and enhancer loops. While here we basically try to understand it from the interchromosomal perspective, how chromosomes interact with each other. So we did basically this analysis. So here for all the different cell types, for samples that we have, we mapped the interaction from all the chromosomes to all the chromosomes. And then basically the first thing that you can see is here this this dark spot that is basically the interaction of chromosome 14 up with 11 down. So basically here you can see we can pick up the translocation. Of course, this is not what we're really interested. We look at other changes because this is an expected result. So we basically removed this from our analysis. And then we compared the interchromosome interaction profile of mantle cell lymphoma with our two control samples. And here's this is what you can see over here. So this is mantle cell lymphoma versus mature B cells, and this is versus CLL. And then you can see that we can identify the top common gains of interactions and the top common losses of interactions. And if you look at the distribution, you can see that these top common gains and losses more frequently than by chance affect chromosome 11 and 14. So there's a change in interchromosomal interaction landscape on chromosome 11 and 14 beyond just the translocation itself. So to summarize this initial findings, we basically see that chromosome 11 up and 14 up change their interchromosome interaction effect, and chromosome 11 down has a lot of mantle cell lymphoma specific gene expression changes. To study this further, we went to in vitro and in silico studies, and we first focused on allele-specific HiSCR in imaging and 3D genome modeling. So we took our mantle cell lymphoma-specific HiSCR data, and we did in silico modeling of their 3D genome structure at the full nuclear level. So basically what we did is we deconvoluted published 3D interaction data to get diploid genomes and to get interaction patterns of the translocated and the non-translocated alleles. So we could basically separate those two. And then we built models. So for each of our samples, we built 100 models. And for each of those models, we measure for all the chromosomes the distance to the nuclear center to see if the positioning of the chromosome in the nucleus changes, because we know this positioning is not random. Large chromosomes are located in the nuclear periphery, and small chromosomes are located in the nuclear center. But that's a rule of thumb. This is all probabilities based on populations of cells. So, and this is basically what we observe. So we have our four chromosomal pieces, and we see here the non-translocated alleles for the normal cells in purple, the non-translocated alleles for the CLL cells in light blue, and then we have for the mantle cell lymphoma a non-translocated allele and a translocated allele. And basically what we see is that here we see an inward shift of chromosome 11 up. You see that this translocated allele moves inwards because it gets closer to the nuclear center. And in the opposite way, we see an outward shift of this translocated chromosomes 14 up. So this moves outwards. So then we tried to understand this further. We did allele-specific HiSCR only of chromosome 11 up, because the cell line didn't allow us to do the other parts of the chromosomes. So to do allele-specific HiSCR, you have to have information of the genotype. So what we did is we did chromosome sorting of our cell line. So here you can see that with chromosome sorting, here each dot is a chromosome. And you can sort the chromosomes based on two different dyes. So basically you sort them based on length and GC content. And you can see here this cloud is only present in the mantle cell lymphoma cell line. It's not present in healthy cells. So this is the derivative 11. So this piece that's become significantly shorter. And this cloud is the wild type chromosomes 9 to 12 that cannot be separated individually. But basically we know that chromosome 11 wild type chromosome is actually here. So basically from this chromosome sorting, then we did sequencing, and then we got our allele-specific genotype. So now we can basically have our heterozygous SNPs that distinguish the wild-type allele from the derivative allele, and then we repeated our HiSCR analysis, and we basically see this pattern in which we here plotted the fold chains of interactions from the translocated allele over the wild-type allele. And then basically what you see is that the translocated allele loses interactions to long chromosomes and increases interactions to short chromosomes, because these are the short chromosomes and these are the long ones. So this suggests that this chromosome undergoes an inward shift towards more interactions to the small chromosomes. To test this further, we did allele-specific imaging, and we basically observed the same. So in this case, we used break-apart probes, in which we basically have two probes that are spanning the breakpoint. So the orange probe is just above the breakpoint, and the blue is just below. You can see in a wild-type cell that those are close together because these chromosomes are intact. But if you have a translocation, you can see that you have a wild-type chromosome here, and then two pieces representing the two different derivatives in blue and in orange. And then basically what we did is we for all these different alleles, we basically mapped the distance to the nuclear lamina. So basically the further away here, it means that the more central it is in the nucleus. And then you can see for this cell line that the translocated alleles are actually more towards the nuclear center. And we see this the same thing for another cell line. So basically, our conclusion is that this chromosome 11 upshifts inwards. However, if we look at gene expression changes, probably the gene expression changes are very minor. And this is surprising because it's always considered that inward shifts means that these chromosomes become much closer to a permissive gene expression environment, but the expression changes are very little. There's probably very few. So, in conclusion, this chromosome undergoes an inward shift, and this chromosome potentially goes an outward shift, but we don't have enough evidence to test that, so we're trying to get further into this. So, but then we wanted to go more into the gene expression effects, and for that we generated translocases in vitro. So we basically take normal lymphoblastoid cell lines, so these are human cell lines with a human karyotype, and we introduce by CRISPR, we introduce cuts into the genome, and those cells then repair themselves, and if that repair goes wrong, you basically get a translocation. So this is a random process. This is not very efficient. Normally the cells just repair the correct way. But here you can see that in our different replicates, in 10% of the cells, this repair actually goes wrong, and you can detect the translocation. So we have pools of cells, and 10% have a translocation that we want to investigate. And those translocations actually lead to an overexpression of our gene of interest, which is cyclin E1. You can see a tenfold overexpression, considering that you have 10% of cells. So this represents a 100-fold overexpression in the cells that really actually have the translocation. So then we wanted to understand what is the effect of these translocations at the level of gene expression, and we actually had two ways of doing that. And this is conceptually important because in the way you compare the data, you get different answers. So basically, if you have here our control sample without translocated cells, and here a sample with some cells that carry the translocation, those cells have an effect on the other cells in the cellular pool. So basically, if you compare the control versus the sample with translocations, you get both the cell intrinsic effects that are present in the cells, but you also get the paracrine effects. Well, actually, if you would do a single cell analysis in this sample in which you compare the wild type cells with the cells with translocation, you actually only get the cell intrinsic translocation induced effects. So we did opt for the last option, and then we did a single cell analysis. So this is a UMAP, each dot is a single cell. And then we mapped for all the cells which are positive for cyclin E1, because cyclin E1 is our marker of having the translocation. So to our confirmation, around 10% of the cells were positive for cyclin E1, meaning that our initial measurements of the estimation of how much cells have the translocation are actually compatible with observations here. So then we compared the cyclin E1 positive cells with the cyclin E1 negative cells, and we look for upregulated genes, and then we see again the same plot as we saw before. We did a chromosomal distribution of the upregulated genes in the cyclin E1 positive cells, and then you see here again that there's a large fraction of upregulated genes on chromosome 11 down, which is basically actually already what we saw before in the mantle cell lymphoma patients. So, and of course, now I would come to probably the topic of this colloquium. This is related to a very strong enhancer. I will just try to explain this a bit further. So first of all, we wanted to see if all the genes on chromosome 11 down get upregulated, or whether there are specific sites on the chromosome that are more susceptible than others. So we basically did a statistical test to understand which regions on the chromosome. So this is the different regions on the chromosome have more enrichment of upregulated genes than by chance. So the higher the bar, the higher the enrichment is. And then you can basically see that here there's a clear overlap between the mantle cell lymphoma patients and our in vitro models. And then you can actually see that this bin, which is 50 megabases away from the breakpoint, so it's basically located somewhere here, has a very high significant upregulation of genes. And important to note is that in these two model systems, it's the same genomic location, but they are not the same genes. And we try to understand that a bit further. So in this system, we have our in vitro translocation model, and we try to understand what makes this, what is so special about these genes that get upregulated. So what we did is we took all the genes, either in all the chromosome over here, or only in this specific bin, and we checked their promoter activity prior to translocation generation. And then you can see that that if you look, compare the genes that are not upregulated versus the genes that are upregulated, that you can see that the genes that get upregulated already are in an active promoter state. So basically, this tells you that in the large majority of genes, we see an enhancement of expression of already active genes on chromosome 11 down, but not the inactivation per se, except for the gene, the cyclin E1 gene, which is located in the same topologically associating domain, that clearly gets activated. But here on the rest of the chromosome, it's probably an enhancement and not a strong activation signal. So to understand this a bit further, we looked into the 3D genome folding of this entire chromosome. So we took our in silico models, but now we look at the now we look at the 3D genome structure intrachromosomally. So this is a map in which we basically have the chromosome from start to end, and we look at the interactions with other regions in the genome in the same chromosome from start to end. So, and here basically all the regions that are dark are regions that are interacting more strongly with each other. So you can see that there's a strong linear distance. So basically meaning that everything that is very dark is very close together. Well, let's put it that way. So basically you see on the diagonal, things are close. This makes sense because they are linearly also very close. But you can see this kind of patterns here of regions that are further away in linear space, but they actually come together in 3D space. So, and if we just focus here on this region, so this is the breakpoint region, and this is this megabase bin 120. And you can say here that these interact very closely with each other. So there's like a long-range interaction between these two regions already in the wild-type chromosome 11. And then if you look in the translocated chromosome, we actually have the same plot, but now for the translocated chromosome, you see here this interaction exists again in the same place. So this is a long-range interaction from this bin at the breakpoint towards this megabase bin 120. But now the difference is that this interaction all of a sudden now contains this very strong immunoglobulin enhancer. So if you plot this data in a different way, so this is exactly the same data, but in a different plot, you basically can see that if we plot here the linear distance from the breakpoint, so this is the breakpoint, and this is the linear distance from the breakpoint, and this is the 3D distance from the breakpoint. You can see that they go hand in hand, so the further away you go linearly, the further away you go in 3D space, but then from here, you basically start to see that the 3D space starts to show some folding, and here you can see that these regions are actually in linear space very far away, but in 3D space they are closer to the breakpoint than the other regions that are located over here. So basically meaning there's a 3D interaction, a very long distance 3D interaction. So that basically means that there's new long-range regulatory interactions based on the pre-existing ones, because they pre-exist already in the wild-type chromosome. But the difference is now that you get this proximity to this very strong enhancer that is induced by the translocation. To understand if this immunoglobulin enhancer really plays a very clear role, we basically did two final analyses. The first analysis, if this immunoglobulin, the distance to the immunoglobulin locus is very important, it means that the 3D distance to the breakpoint is a better predictor of gene expression changes than the 2D distance would be. And this is actually what we did. So we basically plotted the linear distance here versus the log2 fold change that we see in terms of expression, and you can see there's no significant correlation. But if you plot the 3D distance to the breakpoint here compared to the log2 fold change, you can see you get a significant negative correlation as we expect. And then the last thing we try to understand if there's translocation-induced gene expression effects that are allele-specific, because we basically see that you translocate only to one allele and not to both alleles. So you translocate either to the maternal allele or to the paternal allele. In our in vitro system, we expected this to be random because we basically make cuts in the genome and they can either translocate to the maternal or to the paternal. So we basically looked into, we did SmartSeq data and we looked into whether there's any allele specificity at the level of gene expression. So and for that we used heterozygous SNPs, and then basically what you would expect randomly is that two genes are expressed in equal levels from the maternal and the paternal allele if you're not talking about imprinted regions. So we basically look at our cells that are non-translocated, and you basically can see that there's kind of around 50, so the frequency of maternal over paternal transcripts is around 50%. But if you translocate to the maternal allele, you see that there's a significant enrichment of allele-specific transcripts from the maternal allele on chromosome 11, which is, let's say, goes in line with our hypothesis. But we do see, actually, if we translocate to the paternal allele, you don't see that. And we still don't understand that. We would like to understand what makes the paternal allele special, why you don't see it at the paternal, at the maternal, but we're trying to figure that out now. Then at last I would like to show you our working model. So here I have listed again the three different changes that we see. So this alteration in genome size leads to an alteration in genome positioning, but there's very little gene regulatory effect. If any, they are at the breakpoint level, at the breakpoint site, but it's very little, less than we actually expected based on the literature. So this displacement of this enhancer leads to long-range gene expression enhancement on the affected chromosome, this 11 down. And something I didn't show is that this telomeric displacement leads to an effect at the level of chromosome folding, which we like to also look further into. So the working model is that if you have a healthy cell and you make a translocation, then this chromosome, wild type 11, moves closer to the nuclear center. And at the same time, we see that in a wild type chromosome, you have already a very long range interaction between cyclin E1 locus, so the breakpoint locus, and a locus 50 megabases away. Upon translocation gets close to the immunoglobulin enhancer, and we think that there's kind of a spread of this permissive environment from the immunoglobulin enhancer to activate genes that are already active at the wild type chromosome 11. So of course, this gene expression alterations, then the big question is what are the functional consequences? Are these extra effects relevant for tumor formation, or whether are they side effects that don't make any difference for the full development of the tumor? So we're currently looking into that. And if you want to know more, this is on bioRxiv, so feel free to check it out. And of course, last but not least, the acknowledgement. So this is work that has been majorly done by Anna Onsins, a PhD student in the lab, with the strong support from Ruze Zaurin, who has done a lion's share of the experiments in this study. And of course, I would like to thank you for your attention and the funding and all the other collaborators. Thanks.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.